go on to the second case of the morning.
Good morning.
You settled here. Robert Williams versus Gary Hoswick. Ms. Brown?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity and my first opportunity to present oral argument to this panel in a case that involves such important constitutional issues of freedom of speech and due process rights. After over 17 years of unquestionably providing dedicated and conscientious towing services to the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department as one of its listed providers, a list established by the sheriff, Williams was removed from that list without a phone call, without notice, without opportunity to be heard, or any statement of reasons. Mr. Williams learned of his removal one day after he was quoted on the front page of the Waukesha Freeman as stating the public is getting ripped off by the Sheriff's Department tow rotation policies. Now in this case, the sheriff and his top deputies, the ones involved in the decision making, have testified that while the newspaper article was inconsequential, it had nothing to do with either our decision to remove Mr. Williams from this list or our decision to return our tow rotation policy back to a form of closest and quickest, which the sheriff also testified only made sense. It is important to point out that what is at issue in this case is not ultimately whether Mr. Williams should prevail on his First Amendment claim under these circumstances. What is at issue is the fact that summary judgment was rendered against him. I believe that it was inappropriate in this case to prevent Mr. Williams from having a trial when such important speech, clearly from my perspective on a matter of public concern, is at issue. And in this case, in holding that summary judgment could be found, the district court, in my view, relied on the testimony of named defendants in this case, assumed that testimony to be truthful, faulted Mr. Williams for not coming forward to rebut the truthfulness of the named defendant's testimony, and then put that assumed to be truthful reason put forth by the decision makers into the balancing test, which unquestionably is a matter of law for him to ultimately rule on. But what I believe is wrong about this particular decision is the fact that there were a lot of questions of disputed fact in this record that required those determinations to be made by a jury before there was sufficient information to put into the Pickering balancing test.
What about the timing of the letter? Is that your main concern about when, if at all, the department, maybe the sheriff and perhaps his advisors, had the letter, looked at what was in the letter, and then made the decision that this was, I don't know what you would call it, boycott or some job action or something where we're not going to respond. Is the timing of that your major concern?
Well, I think unquestionably the timing is a disputed question of fact as to when it was received. And I think that the record clearly supports that. There simply, as indicated in the brief, there's no date stamp on it. The sheriff believes he received it by a facsimile, but there's no facsimile transmission markings on it. There is no disinterested witness within the sheriff's department, meaning a non-named defendant, you know, directly involved in the decision-making, who can even concur that this letter was even received before the time that Mr. Williams was removed. I had put forth in the brief that, you know, the two people that the sheriff claims that he received this letter from deny giving it to him.
You know, if there's no evidence on the issue of why he was removed from the list, and of course he bears the burden of proof on this point, wouldn't that be a reason to grant summary judgment for the defendant? What is his best evidence that that he was removed in retaliation for his public criticism?
First, I want to make clear, Judge Robner, that it's not just, I mean, we have a twofold argument here.
No.
It is our position that both of these communications are protected under the First Amendment. Both the public speech made on the front page of the newspaper, which basically said the same thing as his letter that was written, his private communication made to his tow operator colleagues. But I think that it is very important because in this case, you know, we don't even have documentation from the Sheriff's Department as to the actual date that Mr. Williams was removed from this list. There's no internal documentation, and the named defendants who made the decision claim that there is no way to even reconstruct that information. So clearly there is a question of fact for the jury to determine when he was removed. It is our position it was after the publication of the newspaper for the simple reason that Mr. Williams first learned of it the day after it was published. People within the dispatch who were also wondering where did Mr. Williams go, what happened to him, made those inquiries at a point in time after the article was published. So we believe clearly the evidence shows that the removal from the list occurred after the front page news article where he was highly critical, strongly critical of the Sheriff's Department.
Now, of course, his letter essentially calls for a boycott.
Well,
and I mean, how was he damaged by the sheriff if the sheriff decides not to call him at that point? Is the sheriff required to continue calling him when he had stated unequivocally that he was going to give preference to his private customers? In other words, can we require the sheriff to continue to call him, which would seem to be a futile act at that point, just so he can turn the sheriff down in order to make his point?
Well, I don't think that I think that whether or not this is a boycott or a form of a modified strike, just what his communication to the tow operators is a subject for interpretation.
Well, it's certainly a veiled threat to not provide towing services because he keeps talking about winter is coming. That's when you, at least in Wisconsin, where you're really worried about towing services. He's talking about it in connection with winter. And that seems to me a veiled threat to not provide services.
Well, I think that when you say a veiled threat, clearly what Mr. Williams said was, I am asking you to not bend over backwards for the Sheriff's Department and give it greater priority than you do to regular customers. The thing that I think is important on that point is, first of all, to be a listed tow operator for Waukesha County Sheriff's Department, there is no requirement that if you get a call in from one of your other customers and from the Sheriff's Department, that you commit to serving the sheriff first. And I think that what Mr. Williams was saying in his communication is that the priority relationship that both sides have long enjoyed is no longer being applied from the Sheriff's Department to the tow operators, and that there are significant problems affecting not only us, but making deputies be like babysitters in the field, disserving the public because they're paying excessive mileage. So what he was saying is that when you have a choice, you have a call that comes in from a regular customer, don't drop that regular customer and say, okay, Mr. Sheriff, I'm going to disregard that business and attend to you first. There's no requirement that they do that. There is no statement within this letter that said that Bob Williams would not, when the sheriff calls and he goes, okay, I'll be there in 20 minutes, there's no indication that once he takes that call, he's going to provide inferior service. His point was that when you have a choice among customers, which they do, because of the sheriff's conduct in not giving them any priority treatment, that you would also consider just serving your regular customers. It seems that everyone has assumed that the Sheriff's Department is entitled to, at all times, have priority treatment over regular customers that these listed tow operators have. That is an assumption that is not the subject of any contract or agreement to be a listed member.
But what case law or statute in Wisconsin gives an informal practice, even a longstanding one, the effect of a property right? What I'm afraid of is if we accept your argument, we would be eliminating the category of at-will relationship.
I think that absolutely is a concern under the facts of this case that this court should not have. Because a distinguishing feature of this case, which distinguishes it from any other, both those other circuits that I put in the brief that found in favor of a due process right, as well as those circuits that found not in favor of a due process right. The one fact we have in this case that none of those decisions have is the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department had a stated policy.
Stay in front of the microphone.
I'm sorry, that elevated the tow operators, the listed tow operators, once on to not be removed except for cause. That's basically what tenure is. Deputy Polujic testified that it is the policy of the department not to remove an operator once on except for actual inability to perform services or actual inability to reach the tow operator
well,
to timely perform.
What if they didn't remove him from the list but never called him?
Pardon?
What if you said they have a right to remain on the list? They couldn't be removed, so they keep them on the list but never call them.
That would be in violation of the order. You know, this case also is one where there are regular rotation orders. That's also consistent with the due process interest and distinguishes it from many of the other cases. And Kay Cumbier-Schwartz had testified, this rotation order, we follow it. It is binding.
Would he have been able to maintain some kind of action here if the defendants had simply decided to eliminate the tow rotation list altogether?
No, I do not think so, Judge. I think that the due process argument that we make, and it's distinguishable from the White Plains case. You'll recall there was a New York case where a New York statute actually said that if there is no duration stated in a contract, that then it's terminable at will. Okay, there's no similar law in Wisconsin on that particular point. But what it means is that while the sheriff maintains this rotation list with all of its listed operators on it, they're entitled to receive that work pursuant to the rotation, even more so in Bob Williams' case when he's had that expectation and experienced it for over 17 years, that it would end either by him voluntarily removing himself or if the sheriff did away with the tow rotation list completely in favor of something new.
Any real sense, though, that if they could, if the sheriff could decide, I'm going to give all the towing business to one company, which they clearly could do.
Yes, he could.
That's permissible. Why they would have to be wedded to this list and not be able to remove somebody from it without procedural due process?
Well, again, I think
like that makes a lot of sense to me.
I can see why you think it doesn't make sense, Judge Evans, but I think that it does for this reason. First of all, the reason that he has the right to claim he should have been given some kind of process is because they have an explicit policy within the department, even though it's unwritten, that they're not going to be terminated, but for certain reasons. That is a for-cause requirement. That's how it's defined in all of the cases.
Well, then they get punished because they do have some procedures that they want to follow. If they had no procedures, then they wouldn't be subject to your claim.
Well, that is true, but you know, the courts have addressed that it's burdensome for government to always have to come forth with reasons and hold these hearings whenever they want to take action. But you know, in a case like this, in fact, in one of the United States Supreme Court decisions, the court had even held that even if somebody could not make out the substantial predicates necessary for a First Amendment claim, where there is significant speech on a matter of public concern at issue, it really isn't onerous to go ahead and have a hearing anyway. And that's even when you don't make out all of the elements, because if the government has good reasons, it's really not so burdensome to put them forth and give them. In this case, there was no reason. The circumstances and the evidence surrounding the removal is really very unusual in that there isn't any documentation or any disinterested witness to even really confirm when or, importantly, why, the real motivation for why Mr. Williams was removed.
Well, now, in that vein, I don't know what you did on discovery and everything, but apparently you tried to find out when the letter was received, who received it, and who made the decision or recommendation based on the letter. Apparently that you weren't able to come up with anything, just nail it down.
That is correct, Judge Mannion. In fact, we went through substantial, after this lawsuit was filed and finding out that, oh, we claimed that we removed due to this, not due to that, we've gone through every effort we can to try and come up with. We assumed we'd then be able to get the letter, and there'd be a date stamp on it or the facsimile transmission.
The trouble with that, where I have here, is even if we were to remand it for that purpose, to say, all right, we've got to come up with a date, and frankly, I think you'd almost have to come up with a date that it was actually received or, let's say, judged upon or something after the newspaper article came out. I think that would be dispositive that the judge was wrong when he said they made the decision on that, not the newspaper article. But there seems to be no basis other than, you say, the defendant saying, no, we got it and made our decision based on that, and it just so happened it was the same time the newspaper article came out.
Well, you know, what's interesting, though, about that judge is even all of the defendants themselves are clearly of record as stating, we don't have any idea whether this letter was received before, during, or after our decision to remove Mr. Williams.
All right? They say is their decision was based on the letter.
Right, right. And
so
it is
obviously it can't be after.
Well, if what they're stating is true.
Well, I guess that's all we got. That's what I guess the concern I have is you say there shouldn't be a summary judgment. Then there has to be some evidence other than, you know, I don't believe them.
Well, I would disagree. And I think in a case like this, where you have people just on their own say-so, named defendants in this case, saying, oh, the article, not even denying that they knew of the article before they removed it, because they state that it's inconsequential. It was inconsequential to our removal decision or to the changes we made to the tow rotation system to fix it after this effective speech came to light. That's just their say-so. Don't you want to be able to see them, see how they say it? What do you mean this front-page article saying that the public's getting ripped off by your policies was inconsequential?
Well, you say the testimony was that their decision was made before or after the article? Did you say there was...
Their testimony is they don't have a clue whether it was before, during, or after.
The decision.
The date that they received the letter.
Well, I know we're talking about two different things. One is the letter and the other is the decision. Now, I realize that they say the decision was contingent on the letter.
Yes, they do state that the decision was based on the letter, not due to the public communication.
So the date of the letter, if we knew it to be later than the date of publication, or certainly later than the date of termination, then obviously that would be a very important fact.
Absolutely. That's a very important fact.
And apparently we can't find it. You couldn't find it when you did all your discovery.
This is true. There's no document that will substantiate it, but that's why it's a question for the jury. The date that letter was mailed, the fact that the two people the sheriff said he got it from absolutely deny they gave it to him, all of that supports inferences that this letter then had to have made it in the mail to somebody other than the people the sheriff say he got it from, all of which would take time. And I think it's for a jury to determine whether it's ultimately feasible that the letter would have even had the opportunity to be at the sheriff's department's office before September 16th, which is the date that Mr. Williams learned he had been removed. So there are credibility and fact determinations and you know, sort of feasibility in the mail system. It has to be that way because the department claims it doesn't have this evidence. So therefore, it will be up to a jury to determine, and should be, whether or not they had this letter they claim was the real reason. I note, Your Honor, that I'm into my rebuttal time. And thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Munson?
Good morning. May it please the court. This case is about customer satisfaction, nothing more. It is not about a violation of the First Amendment, nor a violation of the Fifth Amendment. My client, the Waukesha County Sheriff Department, or the department, was the customer, and its goals were to ensure the safety of the public and its officers by efficiently removing damaged and abandoned vehicles from roadways.
But certainly you would concede that some of Williams' criticism of the sheriff's tow system was on a matter of public interest. He expressly said the taxpayers were being cheated, for example. Would you agree that the sheriff could not have removed him from the list solely for that comment?
Solely for a comment that was just related to a matter of public concern. But here we're talking about an article and a letter, and our position is that there is nothing that addresses a matter of public concern in the letter, and that if you look at the letter,
Right, but you started out by arguing that this is pure and simply about customer satisfaction. And
that's looking at it from our focus of just the letter. If you want to also take into consideration the one comment from the article that says the public is getting ripped off, we'd still ask the court to look at all of the statements in the context from which Mr. Williams was speaking. And that was that this is about money. He was upset that his toll calls had declined and that he was not getting the calls that he thought he should. And in that way, this case is like Connick versus Myers, the United States Supreme Court 1983 decision, where they looked at a questionnaire. And one question in the questionnaire went to a matter of public concern, but the court still found that looking at the questionnaire as a whole, it addressed a matter of private concern.
What is your best evidence that the decision to remove him came before the publication of the newspaper article where the sheriff was publicly criticized?
That article is the testimony of Sheriff Krasicki at page 45 of his deposition testimony, which is in the record at record site 21. He explained, quote, when asked when it was, quote, no, I think it was before, end quote. So what we have as best evidence is September 10th, 1998 letter, Sheriff Krasicki's testimony and that of his two inspectors saying that they saw the letter and conferred, and then Sheriff Krasicki made the decision, and his deposition testimony. Mr. Williams has no evidence to contradict those facts. He can speculate, but speculation is not enough to get to the jury.
Just one quick question just on that is when you say he testified he thinks he got it before, I thought I read that he thought some was just some crackpot letter and squashed it up and threw it away. Am I wrong on that? Who was that?
That was Sheriff Krasicki, but I think again we're talking about when was the letter received and when was the decision made?
Yeah, I mean the first thing he received this letter, I think he recalls receiving, he just threw it away, I think. Is that right?
He did give that testimony, but he also explained that at some point in time he discussed the letter with his inspectors.
Well, he didn't dig it out of the wastebasket and iron it out and fold it. Did somebody else get the letter and then they discussed it?
We don't know that. We don't have an answer to that question. What we do know is that the letter was dated September 10th, that they discussed it. And although they don't remember the timing of those discussions, the decision was made within a short period of time. One inspector said something about a couple of hours. And we've got Sheriff Krasicki's testimony saying that he knows that he gave the order to have it removed before that September 15th article. We further have his testimony that the articles were inconsequential, meaning they didn't take them into account. They were just concerned about whether or not they were getting good service.
I don't know what exactly you mean by inconsequential there, but I have a hard time believing any public official would read that article in the Waukesha Freeman and not be upset about it, being accused of ripping off the public and so on. So, that aside, what if there was no letter here? Could Waukesha County have knocked this company off the tolling list based on a reading of the newspaper story?
That would be a more difficult analysis.
Why?
Because his letter makes much more of a threat than what is stated in the article. His letter was focused towards an audience, and that was other toll operators.
But this is a free speech issue insofar as the newspaper story is concerned, is it not?
That goes back to Judge Rovner's question. There was one comment about a matter of public concern, whether or not the public was getting ripped off, but then the others were all private.
See,
so our position was
still...
What I'm
saying is you could still take the position that this newspaper, all the ideas expressed in this newspaper article were matters of private concern. He wasn't making enough money. He was upset about that. So they fire him. And support the firing based solely on that newspaper story, if that was the case.
Yes. Yes, you could. All I meant to say was, given the strong language in the letter, this case is much more clear. That there was a threat of second-rate service. So yes, the decision could have been made just based on the article, but that isn't what happened here. We had the letter.
Well, the district court made his decision based on the letter, I presume.
That's correct. But there, if you go down the analysis as to why there was no First Amendment violation here, we've really just been focusing on one prong, whether or not the speech was a matter of public concern or not. The other three prongs are all individual reasons why this court could also find that there was no First Amendment violation. The second being that Mr. Williams cannot prove that the newspaper article was a substantial or motivating factor for his removal from the list. And again, that's because he does not have any evidence. It's not in a position to go to the jury, nor will it ever be. Even if it's remanded, there will not be any contrary evidence. He can have all the suspicions he wants, but he will not have the evidence that he needs to support his claim.
Other than the timing. Apparently, I don't exactly know how this came out, but it seems that the day after the letter, somebody inquired and they were informed he's off the list. It wasn't exactly a publication. It was, I guess, with the dispatcher or somebody?
The timing is such that September 10th article, or excuse me, September 10th letter.
What happened on September 16th?
September 16th, Mr. Williams testified that he had a suspicion that the department might not have been happy with the article, so he instructed his employee to call the dispatcher and stood by his employee while he heard that he had been removed from the list. So he didn't learn that he was removed from the list on the morning of the 16th. All he learned was that he had been removed.
But he did, but nobody ever checked with the dispatcher or anybody else about when, or they just don't remember?
They just don't remember.
And there's no written document. So all we know is they looked at the list when he called on the 16th and he wasn't on it. No one knows when he was removed, apparently.
That's correct. No one has a specific time or date. We have Sheriff Krasicki's testimony saying he believed it was before the article. Moving on to the balancing test that's been discussed. And that's the balancing test under Pickering, where you weigh Mr. Williams' speech interests with the department's interest in efficiency and safety. It's clear here that the department has to win that contest, because if it doesn't win, what we're doing is we're elevating Mr. Williams' concerns above those of everyone else in the community who might be stuck on a roadway, the officers who might be struck if cars are not towed efficiently, and the department's own efficiency concerns. We'd also be setting the department up to accept poor service. Word would get out that it's okay if you give the department second-rate service. And another point on that balancing test, Mr. Williams argued in his brief that the department needed to show actual harm in order to win the balancing test. Our position concurs with the district court in saying that it would be irresponsible for the department to wait for actual harm. It just doesn't make sense. The department would have to wait until one of its officers was struck on the roadway before it would remove Mr. Williams from the tow list. The next area I'd like to address is that of the Fifth Amendment, and as your questions elicited, Mr. Williams has no property interest in being on that list. He's conceded that there is no statute, no regulation, no contract that creates a property interest. And the many cases cited at page 21 of my brief involving tow companies show that all of those cases required either a statute, regulation, or contract. So all he's left with is the argument that there was a mutually explicit understanding, and that also does not exist. There was nothing mutual at all. There are no definite terms that he can point to. He merely thinks that because he'd been on the list for so many years, he should be allowed to continue being on the list. And as far as the policy that he talks about of requiring cause before a tow operator is removed, that was an internal guideline, much like that in the 1992 Seventh Circuit case of Holmeyer, where a high school teacher sought to maintain employment by pointing to an internal policy. This was an internal policy as well. It's nothing that Mr. Williams knew about, so there's no way that he can say that it was a mutual understanding that he would only be removed with cause. His expectation was simply, as the district court said, a unilateral expectation. And two quick follow-up points that were made in brief was that we also asked for qualified immunity for the individual defendants based on our position that there was no constitutional violation. And we also asked for immunity for the county because there was no unconstitutional policy, practice, or custom.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brown, I think you got 2 minutes.
Initially opened by the representative for the government in this case, that this is a case about customer satisfaction. I think it absolutely is not true. In fact, the record shows the deputy inspector, Inspector Polajczyk, both there 27 to 30 years, stated that in all those years they never had a complaint about Bob Williams' service. In fact, they had received favorable reports about Mr. Williams' service. There is no evidence in this record whatsoever, which I believe to be credible, other than Sheriff Krasicki's claimed third or fourth hand concerns about complaints about Mr. Williams, to show that he has ever provided anything but stellar service to the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department. And that's true all the way up to the date that he was removed.
Oh, there were other letters apparently he had written in the past. Did they give similar threats?
No. There is, let me qualify that. The November of 1996 letter certainly did not indicate any issue about priority treatment. He then wrote another letter to the sheriff's dispatcher, putting forth a whole bunch of really good ideas to improve efficiency of the system. No discussion about what kind of money he's making. This is not just about his money. He had complained before about other issues to serve the public good. But the only time he started with the view that if you don't fix this, sheriff, the tow operators aren't going to view you as a priority anymore, was in his letter after Sheriff Krasicki sent a response to Mr. Williams stating, yeah, I agree with you, Mr. Williams, but we don't have the power to make these recommended changes. Mr. Williams viewed that as hogwash. Ultimately, Deputy Polajczyk also said, no, it's ridiculous. We control our own operational matters. So it was after the sheriff put forth what we believe to be a misrepresentation about the Sheriff's Department powers that Bob first sent the letter saying, this is important. It's got to change. And it was in that prior letter that he issued the same message. The department employees, in fact, indicated some similar content. It didn't result in removal then.
What was the date of that letter?
The date of that letter was 1/17/97. That's the letter to the sheriff, I believe. And then following that, right, 1/17/97. The date of the letter that Bob Williams sent to the sheriff saying it's hogwash and if things don't change, you won't be viewed as a priority. So there was a reason. First of all, I guess an important point is that the district court had indicated that Mr. Williams has the right to complain and criticize, but he did well beyond that and it was too much. Well, in this case, when you have important issues of public concern, and I think all of the issues raised by Mr. Williams were, to say that it's all about Mr. Williams' bottom line and all about his money is to disregard his prior communications to the Sheriff's Department expressing concerns for the public and for the deputies, not for his bottom line. So he cared about these issues long before they were made worse by a policy that disturbed everybody.
Your time's up.
Oh,
thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.